from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A decapitated whale washed up on a Point Reyes beach on Tuesday, the apparent victim of a killer whale. And by the way, a killer whale is not a whale. It's a large dolphin. And whales, by the way, are mammals. Some people think they are an aquatic species all themselves, but we want to get that language straight here. I also want to get numbers straight because it's not the 12th dead whale found on Northern California beaches. It's the 11th since mid-April. And scientists are investigating various causes, from boat collisions to changing ocean patterns that drive the whale closer to shore. In this forum segment, we discuss the recent whale deaths and what may be causing them. And joining us here in studio is Sean Johnson. He's director of veterinary science for the Marin Mammal Center, which, of course, is based in Sausalito. And welcome, Sean. Welcome back. Glad to have you. Also want to welcome Sue Pemberton, who is curatorial assistant with the Department of Ornithology and Mammalogy with the California Academy of Sciences. Welcome, Sue Pemberton.
Thanks.
Glad to have you both here. And let's talk first about what's happening here. I mean, I guess, Sean, for the most part, there's a mystery behind this. I mean, some of them have been perhaps from ship strikes or from different causes, commercial fishing. I mean, there's all kinds of speculation as to what may be causing this changing migration pattern. What's your gut tell you?
Yeah, well, the Marine Mammal Center, in collaboration with the California Academy of Sciences, we respond to any large whale. It's a rare instance to have a large whale strand on our beaches. Typically, we will respond to about 5 whales a year. So we're a little bit over average for this time of year. And it's really our goal to get out and try to investigate the cause of death and cause of stranding in all these whales so we can answer some of the questions you have here.
Well, when they're stranded like that, it gives you rare opportunities, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, some of these whales are very rare, like the sperm whale that we in Pacifica, there's very few sperm whales around. So we learn an incredible amount of information from every single whale that we investigate.
Well, the over-average, Sue Pemberton, that Sean talks about may have to do with the rising population. We had such a long time of trying to save the whales. We have more whales now, right?
Right, and we're also in the peak of gray whale migration, and the gray whale numbers have been pretty stable. They were delisted from the endangered species list back in 1994. So they're enjoying pretty healthy numbers. So we're going to see a lot more of them.
But we're also seeing changing migration patterns in search of food, and we're also seeing climate change. And how much do those have to be factored in here? Because a lot of people love whales, and they want to save as many of them as they can. And these numbers can be just coincidental, but they can also be larger kind of issues like that, right?
We do know there is some changing in the ocean temperature. What it's attributed to, I'm not sure it's so much, you know, the bigger picture of global warming, but maybe indirectly attributed with an El Nino. I think they've declared.
Well, we're not El Nino, but we've got kind of warm flashes and blobs.
Actually an El Nino was declared.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we know that the water got a little bit warmer. The upwellings were taking place further up north around Mendocino. So a lot of the fish that some of these whales or krill and things like that that they may be preying on are moving a little further offshore.
There's a lot more mackerel needs near the shore, I mean, in terms of what they're feeding on.
Which is good news for other species.
Yeah. But what about sonar? Sean, everybody always brings up sonar when there are problems like this.
Yeah, well, whales are highly susceptible to sonar because they use sonar to navigate and to catch their own food. There hasn't been any evidence right now that there's been any sonar activity in the area that we could attribute any of these strandings to. It looks like these little gray whales, mostly what we're seeing as gray whales, are being predated on by
the killer whales.
Yeah. And Sue was just out to the beach yesterday looking at a couple of those carcasses.
What did you see, Sue?
I looked at three. All three of them were calves. One was in Jenner that we were not able to examine up close because it was down a very steep cliff. But we did look at the one at Portuguese Beach up in Bodega, and it was very much an orca kill. It had rake marks and orca nose bruises all over its little body. And so we were and this was a calf, and it's really common for orcas to pick these little guys out. And it's a way that they teach their young how to hunt. Unfortunately, they don't actually eat these young whales. They'll eat a little bit of the tongue and leave the carcass for us.
I want to ask you about that, but there's a range of ages here too, as well as species, right?
Right. We've seen, we've seen everything from, you know, an adult female humpbacks and a couple of adult gray whales. And then we've seen a handful of little calves.
But we're talking about over average here, and they don't, Sean, survive very long on land. And a lot of people think, oh, we got to push them back in the water, right?
Yeah, so all the whales that have stranded recently have been already dead. And these are really large mammals, and they're not meant for the gravity and the pressure of being on the beaches. So all of them that we've found so far have already passed away, either out at sea or potentially when they hit the beaches.
Well, there's some crazy things that are happening. I was reading in Pacifica with one of these stranded whales. Some motorcycle gang were putting graffiti on them. But the fact of the matter is they begin to smell horribly. And what do you do about the carcass, Sue Pemberton?
You know, a lot of places along the coastline that we cover, the Marine Mammal Center and Cal Academy cover, are pretty desolate. And a lot of them are national or state parks. And a lot of those places, like in Point Reyes and up in Bodega, are happy to let these carcasses kind of hang around and dissolve naturally.
Well, let me do this. I know there are many listeners who are, of course, concerned about whales, love whale watching, and there are people who can almost say live for whales. I'd like your responses, and this is a good opportunity for you to bring questions in that concern you about this or concern you about what may be a pattern, what may be a coincidence. I mean, at this point, as I say, a lot of this is shrouded in mystery, but we've been talking about some of the major changes that are going through now in terms of migration patterns and search for food, in terms of climate change, and also the fact that ships are colliding with some of these whales. Ship strikes are responsible for accidents with whales, but also commercial fishing or perhaps overfishing with fishing lines and nets and gears. And we'd like to hear from you, and we certainly welcome your joining the conversation. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. Some of you may have your own thoughts about what's causing this over-average number of whale deaths. Again, we welcome you. And we give you a phone number with which you can join us. 866-733-6786 is that number. Also, you can join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going right to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and clicking on the segment. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Scientists really searching for a cause of Bay Area whale deaths, and that's what we're talking about here. Sean Johnson with us in studio, directs veterinary science for the Marine Mammal Center, which is based in Sausalito, and Sue Pemberton, also with us in studio, is curatorial assistant with the Department of Ornithology and Mammalogy with the California Academy of Sciences. So I got to ask both of you before we bring our listeners into this, how concerned are you with this? I mean, if you have to weigh, on the one hand, the possibility that it's all coincidence, different kinds of causes against maybe some kind of monolithic or cause that's really killing whales, major cause that's killing whales or causes, where do you lean?
I don't really have a lot of cause for concern as far as that. A lot of the stuff we're finding is very natural. It just happens to coincide with a lot of onshore winds that we've had lately, and animals that we most likely wouldn't see because they would sink at sea, like the sperm whale, got washed ashore.
Well, it's not only those offshore winds, it's currents that are moving them ashore as well, right? And you've got the population increase. So all of these things may be part. So in other words, you're not as concerned as some people appear to be.
Right.
So we've seen an increased number of carcasses on the beach whale, and they have a lot of people have a lot of interaction with them. They're smelly. But it is really important that we respond to them rapidly, every single one, so that we can make these determinations. I mean, we did have a humpback whale that also washed up on the Pacifica beach that had evidence of ship strike. So because of the previous investigations that we've done, there's been some changes in the shipping lanes in and out of San Francisco Bay in the past. So it's very important that we respond and try to determine the cause of death on all these animals, because you never know what's going to come. Right now, it seems like this is normal migration patterns with the gray whales, but we saw a ship strike in the humpback. The sperm whale is a mystery. We also did have a killer whale that got entangled in fishing gear up in Fort Bragg.
What do we do to reduce that problem? Because there's overfishing going on.
Well,
there's
a lot during the crab season. There's a lot of crab pots out there that the migrating whales can get entangled in, and hopefully the fishermen and NOAA are coming up with different methods to prevent some of the entanglement and maybe modifying the seasons to prevent the whales and the interaction with the fishing gear.
Okay, let's bring our callers in here, and let's begin with Francis. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question has to do with the degree of change in the migratory patterns. Can that be quantified? And either way, if it can or if it can't, can that be reversed?
Well, Sean Johnson.
The migratory patterns of the gray whales are very consistent. They breed down in Mexico in the wintertime.
They go up to Alaska.
They go up to Alaska to feed in the Arctic, and they do this migratory round trip every year. It's the largest migration of any mammal on Earth. Longest, I mean, migration. So that hasn't necessarily changed, except because of the water temperature changes, the timing of the year has changed a little bit on when they're going up north and coming back south. And the ice changes up in the Arctic, the ice is melting so quickly, that's changing their feeding grounds and making it more difficult for them to feed. So the gray whale migration is changing with the global climate change.
And aren't the food sources changing too?
And the food, because of the water temperature changes, the foods are moving. And that's with the humpback whales. We're finding that they tend to have always migrated to Hawaii in the wintertime, but now they're staying around year-round here because the water temperature and the food sources are all changing. So I don't know if there's any answer to, you know, the animals are adapting to the environment that they're giving.
And again, Sean Johnson is Director of Veterinary Science with the Marine Mammal Center. Sue Pemberton is Curatorial Assistant with the Department of Ornithology and Mammalogy with California Academy of Sciences. What do you advise people to do, Sue, if they see a stranded whale?
Either contact the Marine Mammal Center at their general line at 415-289-7325, or you can call our hotline at California Academy of Sciences, 415-379-5381.
And we'll bring another caller in, and that's Joe from Los Gatos. Joe, welcome.
Thanks, guys. So I was listening to everything that was being commented on. My first question is, was any autopsy or blood work done on the whales that were found on the shores?
We did do necropsies to the most permissible amount. Sometimes it's not worth it when the animal's really super degraded to really make a huge mess when there's not going to be a whole lot that we can derive from that examination.
But that's standard to do the necropsy.
Right. Yeah. We want to examine every single one to the fullest extent that we can, because we not only does it help shape a better picture for each species scientifically, but it also helps us in guiding their conservation and the preservation of their habitat.
It also contributes to your baseline data, yeah?
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Let me thank Joe for the call, and we'll get to some more calls. Again, you can join us at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. Here's Bruce from Sebastopol. Bruce, you're on. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Two comments. One, I do fish commercially. I have for 40 years. And while there has always been, you know, a mix of gear and marine mammals, unfortunately, the increase in whale mortality at this point doesn't reflect an increase in fishing activity. In fact, we're seeing a tremendous decline in effort because of permits and, you know, one thing or another, permit regulations. The other comment would be on the fact that one of the largest warm water puddles ever observed in record model times, modern times, in the Southeast Pacific, it's been going on for about a year, year and a half. Additionally, more than 100,000 young auks, it's a seabird, died at sea this winter and spring. And, of course, there's all this mortality among young sea lions. My thought is that there's a connection to all of this, and it's not quite so, laying the fault, for instance, in fishing gear is a very, very, very slight part of the larger problem. Thank you.
Okay, Bruce, we thank you for that. Sean or Sue, want to respond? Sean Johnson.
I think the caller is correct. There's a really large issue here when we're looking at the ocean environment and the incredible changes in the ocean temperature and the winds and the melting sea ice. It's having a real dramatic effect on all the species that rely on the ocean for their well-being, and that including humans at this point, and the changes in our weather and our drought.
We've got acidification. We've got the climate change.
Yeah. So we've had two whales that have been entangled in fishing gear, but that is a small number compared to all the other larger issues that we're dealing with right now with the climate change and the changes in the ocean environment.
I'm sorry, you want to add something, Sue?
There's just many perils that these animals face on a daily basis. One of the whales that was examined up north just this past week up in Mendocino was missing her tail flukes, and she was actually seen alive in San Diego swimming without her tail flukes. And the fact that she made it this far up without tail flukes was pretty amazing, but she clearly spent all of her energy trying to compensate for the fact that she didn't have tail flukes anymore. And those injuries are pretty consistent with some sort of human interaction, whether it be a prop strike or a crab pod entanglement. But I'd say of the 11 that we've examined recently, there have only been two cases where it was confirmed human interaction.
These are such amazing animals. I said, you know, people just live to watch and love to watch them, but also to hear them, you know.
Right.
I mean, the music the whales make, there's been a, in fact, we did a program on this. There's a tweet from Annalise who writes, are ships required to report whale strikes?
They're supposed to be reporting it. There is no punishment for...
not reporting?
Well, for hitting a whale. I mean, it's inevitable when you have commerce on the ocean, and we have the San Francisco Bay that is, you know, a very busy spot for ships coming in and out and for whales going north and south. So we would hope that they would report them if they know it. You know, if it's a very, very large container ship, they may not know that they hit it. And, you know, the people are saying, well, why can't ships slow down? It takes about 12 miles for a ship to actually come to a stop. And a whale is coming up for air. They don't normally just hang around at the surface of the water. They just come up for air. And so it's just a quick little interaction that is oftentimes fatal for the whale.
Could we also dispel something? There are a lot of myths about whales. I mean, going back to Jonah, you know, swallowing us, and Melville with Moby Dick. I mean, they're pretty peaceful animals for the most part, aren't they?
Yes, for the most part. Orcas, I think, are pretty peaceful, but it's kind of hard when you're looking over a little gray whale that's been battered to death by an orca.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah.
Let me get another caller on. Dan, that's you. Good morning.
How you doing, sir?
Hi.
My name's Dan. I'm from Pacifica. I live about three blocks from some of the whales on Maury Point Beach. I was doing some recent research on a contentious legal issue from 1972 and ran across an article in the Daly City Record. And the gist was, what are we going to do with all these whales washing up on the beach from 1972 and how they were dynamiting them? It was a really interesting article and kind of gives a timeline history scope on this.
Anybody want to write way in here on this? Sean, go ahead.
Whale carcass removal from the public beaches has been an ongoing problem, and it still is today. I mean, these are such large animals, and they're decomposed very rapidly, and there's a lot of oil in their carcass. And there's different ways. You know, most often we try to bury them on the beach or let them decompose if it's in a park, or if the, you know, if it's possible, you might be able to tow them out to sea to allow them to, you know, regenerate back into nature and be consumed by all the organisms out there. So it's been a pretentious issue for a very long time.
And again, they smell.
They're very stinky.
Terribly. A
lot. Yeah. Here's Gil from San Jose. Gil, you're on.
Yeah. So they were saying earlier that the number of whale carcasses on the sightings on the beach this year is above average. But is it like, you know, one or two sigma above? I mean, if you don't have above average, then if it's always below average, then your average tends to drop. Right. So how much more sightings is it than usual?
Well, we've had on average, we get between 3 and 5 large whale carcasses wash up within our range, which goes from Sonoma down through the San Mateo, Santa Cruz County coast, the county line. And just since the beginning of April or middle of April, right, with the sperm whale, we've had 11. So it's just an uptick. I think this could be more attributed to the strong onshore winds that we had. Like I said, the sperm whale is one that we probably really wouldn't have seen had it not been for the strong winds. That's a very far out pelagic whale that spends a lot of time underwater, and I wouldn't expect to see sperm whales, and we don't see them very often.
Well, what you do see a lot of course, are gray whales. Have you seen differences in migratory patterns of the gray whales with this last migration, which I guess ended pretty much in the end of April? Huh?
Actually, we're kind of in the peak. They go through July, February through July. They're kind of heading north. You might have, you know.
I was thinking about here, though. Yeah.
Yeah, here. No, I saw them into July. When we were out working on the humpback and Pacifica, there were gray whales going by in the surf about 100 feet offshore.
So people want to know this. You can still see them.
Absolutely. Go to any point that, you know, out on Point Reyes or any point along the coast.
Let me thank the caller. But they do get off the – I mean, remember Humphrey, right? They do get off their patterns. And is that happening more often?
We did have some humpbacks in the bay a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But we didn't hear any more from them, which is good news.
It's good news indeed. Let me get another caller on here. Sherry joins us from Pacifica. Sherry, hi.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if Fukushima has any effect on what's going on here.
Not so far as we can tell. It's we don't normally screen for radiation, but, you know, the actual cause of death is much more apparent than anything nefarious like radiation.
So the suspicion is no, are the, at Correct. Least the conclusion at this point so far. Sherry, thank you for that question. Let me get Bryce on next from Burlingame. Bryce, you're on.
Hi, I was curious if any of this, the number of orca attacks indicates any kind of change in their population or pressure on their habitat.
You know, I've been working in marine mammals for about 21 years, and the orcas weren't really that prevalent down here for a long time. It seems like they're much more comfortable around here. You see them more in Monterey in very large numbers, and they are opportunistic. They're going to take any opportunity they can to teach their young how to hunt. So they will oftentimes single out the gray whale and humpback calves to practice that on. I think there might be more presence of orca than there had been historically, and that's could be why we're seeing.
Well, that could be accounting for a lot of, I mean, that predation could be accounting for a lot of what we're talking about. Yeah.
Right.
Let me thank the caller, and we'll go right to another caller, and you can join us again at 866-733-6786 with minutes remaining, and let's get Ann on. Ann, hi.
Hi. My observation is about whales in off the coast of British Columbia. I know that they've been tracking for many years the orca pods that live in Georges Strait between Vancouver Island and British Columbia, and also humpbacks. I've seen myself humpbacks going through Johnson Strait. And it's not just direct shipping strikes or fishing gear that place whales place them in stress. It's also the sound that is in the ocean because of heavy shipping traffic all up and down the Pacific coast from Baja to Alaska. And that sound travels for hundreds of miles and basically makes it harder for them to communicate and just places stress on them on a daily basis. So I know that the orca pods in Johnson Strait are in trouble. So thank you.
Well, thank you for the call, Anne. And let's see if we can track this down for a moment just in terms of the sound and the effect of it. Sue, can you help us here?
We know that sound, just ocean ship sounds are a bit of a problem, and sometimes they can get so bad that they can't function normally. It disrupts their normal behavior, which could be foraging or communicating with their pods. I don't know what can be done. You know, shipping is a pretty big part of
our livelihood. It's a big industry,
livelihood.
And it gets bigger.
Right, and it's part of our living. Yeah. All we can do is kind of hope that folks who are taking part in activities on the ocean are just being more aware of their impact.
And let me go to Vallejo next. Dawn, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Oh, yeah. I'm just curious. Do the mothers of the humpbacks and gray whales, do they have a way to protect? Do they attempt to protect their babies?
They do. It's actually heartbreaking. I've seen just this last week because we were trying to match up the adult female carcass in Half Moon Bay to some video that was taken by Sanctuary Whale Tours down in Monterey Bay of an orca kill a couple of weeks ago where the mother was fighting for a couple of hours trying to defend her calf. And this animal that we had down in Half Moon Bay had some bruising along the side of her jaw. So we were going to try and match up her markings with this female that was trying to protect her young. I can't bring myself to watch the video. It's too much for me. I don't want to see that part. I'll deal with the dead ones all day long. I just can't watch the process before they die.
You want to add something here, Sean Johnson?
I think the killer whale, the orcas, are the apex predator of the ocean, and you know, all the increased whale populations is going to be good for the killer whales. And really, if we see all these populations increasing, that does mean that there is some hope for the oceans and the environment that we're in. You know, it's a really good sign that we're seeing the predation off our coast here.
And let me thank the caller and go right to another caller from Santa Cruz. Jody, welcome. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I wanted to say two different things. One is that my understanding is the folks who do the gray whale census count in Southern California from the Point Vicente Interpretive Center had a record number of gray whale calves heading north this season. So that might have something to do with the number of killer whale predation calves that have been seen. But I also wanted to just note that there are two additional carcasses that I have seen, one in San Mateo County, one in Santa Cruz County, that have not been reported. One was a minke whale a few months back. I'd have to check my records and see when that was. It just washed up on a beach, and it was so decomposed that it was way too late for any kind of necropsy to take place. But someone also turned me on to a humpback whale fluke in a marsh, which I saw yesterday in San Mateo County. And it looks like it may have been entanglement. It's very bizarre. It's just the flukes and part of the tailstock of this whale decomposing, and it's inland about a mile from the coast. So that will be reported.
Yeah, Jody, thank you. Sue Pemberton.
Yeah, if you could call the location of that into our hotline, 415-379-5381, or call the Marine Mammal Center, we can get out there and have a look at it and document that.
Okay, that's going to be the end of the program, alas, because it's fascinating to talk about whales, and I wish you all good luck.
Thank you.
And compliment you. In fact, the high props for the work you're doing. Let's hope that we don't see many more of these strandings. Sean Johnson, again, and we'll follow the story, of course, is Director of Veterinary Science at the Marine Mammal Center based in Sausalito. And Sue Pemberton is Curatorial Assistant with the Department of Ornithology and Mammalogy at the California Academy of Sciences. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our senior editor is Dan Zoll. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, we thank you for listening. And I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.